What I'm going to begin today, we are going to go back to just an overview of the book of Exodus. We completed it with the exception of one chapter. And I'll return to that chapter. We're not today. Return to that chapter when we begin the book of Leviticus. All right? So what I want to go, a brief thing, I'm going to have a real fast reading here, and then I'm going to ask you for your input. All right? So, because I think it's very important that we kind of look at back and see what we have learned from Exodus, the first chapter, and all the way to the 34th chapter, but not in detail. I'm not going to read about everything under the sun. So, for Exodus chapter 1, verse 8, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. The most useful and acceptable services done by men are seldom remembered." That's not my saying. I quote, I got that from some other quote. I don't know who said it. He keep on. He says, "We remember world leaders who bring about harm more than those who serve that is good." We are here today. We are here today because Elohim has brought us, each one of us, into remembrance. What are we supposed to remember? We bring into remembrance that He has. We put into our lives the actions of the Shabbat. We put into our lives the actions of the holy days. Each of us stumble and each of us fall, sometimes very, very hard. And yet, what do? We still get back up and change some actions which we, or individuals, or even as a group, come to realize it is not what Elohim wanted us to be doing. We'll always have that until the day we die. We'll always be struggling with that. We know about Joseph, don't we? Because God brought us back into remembrance. We know about Moses because God brought us back into remembrance. We know about David because God brings us back to remembrance. We know about Abraham because God brings us back to remembrance. We know about the Creator of heaven and earth. He has drawn each of us unto His Son. No one else has. We know about Yahshua. We do so because we want to remember and never to forget. That's what we are. We're growing. We're growing. We've left the fundamentals behind, and now we're moving on to things that we are looking. We want to know what God thinks. We want to know what God says. We want to know what God has in mind. And not just that He does. He's not kept it secret from us. He's not kept it secret from the world. He's told the world precisely what He wants in great detail. And sometimes we may go say, "I don't know what God wants me to do." Go back to the Torah. Go back to Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And He's going to tell you there, "This is what I want you to do." And then we go on and we learn from the prophets. We learn from the apostles. That's what it is. You know, the church is built upon the foundations of the apostles and the prophets, and Jesus Christ being the head cornerstone. Every one of you are here today because you believe the prophets. You believe the apostles. You believe Yahshua. Because why? The eternal Creator, the Father Himself, has drawn you to this point in your world, in your life. Do we have a lot of things we don't understand about God? Yes. What do? We go on our knees. We come before God. We say, "This is what I want to know about you, God." He may say, "Not yet. Not time yet. Because you won't understand this point about me until you understand that point about me first." Like the fundamental things of the beginning. Once that's settled, we got it into our hearts. We know what it's all about. Then He says, we will go on to greater perfection. Let's go on to perfection, as the writer of Hebrews says. Ninth verse here, he said unto the people, "Behold, the children of Israel are more mightier." This is what the Pharaoh said, "and mightier and stronger than we. Come on," he says, "now let us speak wisely with them, at least they multiply, be bigger and bigger, stronger and stronger. They join on Saul, their enemies, and fight against us. Now, what's fascinating about this statement is, this Pharaoh, what? Knew not Joseph. It's in their history. However, he rejected the history of his own people. He wanted a different kind of world. And so he came into power. He did something entirely different. Here comes one big lie that was implemented. What was the big lie he said? He stated the lie loud enough and long enough that people began to believe it is true. This is an ancient way of running over and changing the whole philosophy of a nation, changing the whole philosophy of people, and changing the philosophy or the belief system within Christianity, within Judaism, with any other kind of religion it is. You tell a lie long enough, big enough, it becomes, the next generation comes up and says, yeah, it's true, because they don't know the past. All right? That's very, very evident. Now, what was it? He says that they would come and make war against us. You know what? That was not true. That was a lie from the very beginning. But the Pharaoh's leaders, his military men, and the leaders of his staff, they believed him because they have all forgotten Joseph, who blessed by God through Joseph, blessed the whole nation of Egypt. Became very powerful under the offices of Joseph. And guess what? When we, this is another statement, it says, we remember world leaders who bring about harm more than good. And so we look back at Exodus, we remember the Pharaoh who brought forth more harm, but we forgot about Joseph who brought forth good. Do you see the pattern? What's been happening? Verse 11. Therefore they rose and did set taskmasters over them, and they had to build a couple of cities. We won't go there. Now, what's the best way to convince people to submit to a different way of doing things? Have them believe that there is danger ahead. And the Pharaoh had his people believe there is danger ahead. It didn't exist. But there's danger ahead. And so the Egyptian leaders believed him, and there is danger ahead. Therefore, we must do something with these Israelites because they're going to go to war against us. It was a lie from the very beginning. Now, we know the true liar is whom? Satan. He is the father of all lies. He's the one instituted. Tell a lie long enough, big enough, and it'll become believable. How did one group of people manage to overpower another people? How does one group of people manage to overpower another group of people? Well, it's real simple. They managed to convince those who were over, those that were over the greater number of peoples, to begin to have them work for less. And that's what took place. And you see it happens all over the world. When communism take hit, they had the people who were powerful, more stronger, more in number. They turned around and had the people work for things of less, of no importance, of insignificance. And they had them build two cities that really had no value to anybody, not even to Pharaoh. No value. But having them work on government projects, put it this way. All right? Now, we talked about the midwives, and we don't go there today. Now, I want to move real quick to chapter 2. And we know about Moses, and that he was his mother realized he was a ketov because he is good. So she hid Moses for a period of time because she couldn't. We know the story. And we know that she put him in a basket and sent him and put it into a reef by where Pharaoh's daughter, or one of Pharaoh's daughters, we just don't know how many of them, but we know one of them. And then, of course, Moses' sister was waiting there for the lady to pick it up. And when she opened it up, she saw a child, and she realized it was a Hebrew child. And now, how would she know it was a Hebrew child? Now, we have Sesame DeMille in our brain, some of us who are old, and it's such a phony lie that we've come to believe is true. It was wrapped in a certain kind of Hebrew blanket. No. He was circumcised. Oh, really easy to see, right? Here's a boy. And she picked up this baby, and she said, oh, this is a Hebrew child. I mean, it was not a puzzlement to her. It was no enlightenment to her. It was the fact. Okay? And, of course, we know the child had been given back to his original mother for a while until he grew. And verse 10, very fascinating terminology. And the child grew, and she brought him, the mother, the real mother, brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he, Moses, became her son. She called his name Moses. We don't know what his name was before Moses, do we? Does it matter? No, because God wants us to remember that name. So this name wasn't one that she came up with, even though it sounds like it. No, it's a play on words. And guess what happened? The next, verse 10, because I drew him from the waters, verse 11, 10 and verse 11, 40 years passed. And it came to pass in those days that Moses was grown, that he went out to his brethren and looked, and there was on their burden, he spied upon an Egyptian slain a Hebrew, and one of them, and one of his brothers. Now, I know that Sesame DeMille and anybody else and all these cartoons about the Prince of Egypt or whatever, they're total 100% lies. And I'm telling you, really, if you children have looked at them, you let them look at that, you should go back to your places. Okay, child, I'll let you see this. I'm going to tell you the truth. Verse 10, verse 11 says nothing. This is a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. And they're cartoon of the prince, right? He was a rambunctious, out-of-control teenager and had these chariots and just do mess. What? That didn't happen. Never did happen. But it does feed your children to believe it's okay to mess up because mom and dad understand. Mom and dad, oh, the children are always that way. No, that's a lie. And so when you do that with your children, you got to go back. Your grandchildren, go back and show them. That's a lie. Hear it. Verse 10 to verse 11, know the truth. It doesn't say that. I'm a little bit irritated about that. Just one of my big issues, right? We know the book of Acts, and Hebrews talks about it very clear, that he was fully aware that he was an Israelite. I mean, you're growing up as a man, right? And there you're, and you see other Egyptians around, and you know what men do when they go to the bathroom, yeah? They don't look like me. I'm being cynical, but I understand the truth. All right. He knew who he was. You know why? I think his mother, not his real mother, but the Pharaoh became his mother, told him over and over again who he was. Because he didn't look like an Egyptian. He looked like an Israelite. Very obvious, two different groups of people. Well, see, we have a story sometimes. And I'm going to speed along in this story. I want to say one more thing. When he was on the very next day after he killed the Egyptian, the next day he went out and he saw a fellow Israelite kill another Israelite. And he says, why are you killing them for? And of course he said something very powerful, verse 14. And he said, who made thee prince and a judge over us? Listen to that word. The cartoon says the prince of Egypt. Here he says, who made you prince? You're not a prince. Who made you judge? You're not a judge. You're nobody. All right? He was just happened to be Pharaoh's daughter, son brother. He was adopted. And what did Moses do? Scared to death, and he fled. He ran away. 40-year-old man running away. Okay? But he ran away. Didn't want to be killed. And of course, you know, we're talking in the bush. He came to fire, verse chapter 3. I'm going real rapidly because I want to get this point so we have a rehash a few things. And Yahuwah said, I have surely seen the afflictions of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down now to deliver them out of the hand of Egyptians, and to bring them out of the land unto a good land, and a large unto the land of flowing of milk and honey, and so on and so forth. Verse 10. Now, come now, this is chapter 3, verse 10. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee to Pharaoh, and thou shalt bring forth my people of the children of Israel out of Egypt. Now, what was Moses' reaction? Well, we kind of know, right? What? Not me! But, fascinating thing is that the Creator of heaven and earth drew him to the flame. Moses didn't go there because he was curious. He was drawn by it. It's not burning down. There's no smoke. It's not burning up. How can you have a fire up there and there really is no flame? The verse is not burning up. How does this happen? How God works, you know, the unbelievable stuff. That's what drew almost all of us unto the Messiah. Believe it or not, when you look back on your life, is the unexpected. That doesn't make sense to me. And you start investigating the Word of God. Then you start walking toward that direction. In a sense, it's like saying, the Father saying, I gotcha. I gotcha. But he didn't get it by the flame. He got it from other things. Now, the other fascinating thing about God, Elohim delivers people by using people. Did you ever notice that? Noah. He used Noah to deliver the people from his family and the animals from the deluge. And he said, build it. I want you to do it. He told him how to build it. He told him what way to build it. And guess what he did? He did it. And he delivered his own family. And he delivered all those that God sent to the ark. That was not sent to the ark, didn't get in. I know there's a picture of that picture, sayings. That when the flood started coming, there the people outside scratching, wanted to get in. No, they were dead. They died quickly and fast. Noah didn't hear the crying of the people dying outside. You know what he's busy doing? All those noise of the animals making all sorts of noise, you know. They start making a lot of noise. You know, animals, when they get scared, they make a lot of noise. You think those animals were nice, calm, peaceful, loving, fall asleep, quiet? No, they probably were terrified and scared, just as Noah was terrified and scared, and his wife was terrified and scared, and his sons were terrified and scared, and his daughter-in-law was terrified and scared. This was not a piece of cake for them, and saying, oh, glory, glory, hallelujah. Oh, they were afraid. God puts fear into people. What happens to when you put fear into people? They move. Right? They start doing something that he wants them to do. That's what we're learning now. All right. Now, of course, Moses, the fourth chapter, says, they're not going to listen to me, right? What was the first piece of evidence that God gave Moses that they will listen to you? What was it? It was the rod. And the interesting thing about that rod, when he cast it down, it was a deadly snake. And the fascinating thing is, don't never forget this, he took it by its tail, not its head. If you want to capture a snake that's deadly, you better go for its head. Cut it off or grab it and do it anew. But don't grab its tail. You get bit. And all of a sudden, God let him know, I have given you power. That rod is my rod, and you're going to use it to bring forth incredible power with it. And he did, didn't he? We bring the picture. We won't go that far yet today. But we just see a picture of the snake. And we know about the other things, about the hand, and we know about the witheredness, and we know about the water turning into blood, all that kind of stuff. Chapter 5. No, I'm going through this real quickly because I want your feedback here. I just want to bring back some memories here. And afterward, Moses and Aaron went in to Pharaoh, told and said, we need to let my people go that they may hold a feast unto me and into the wilderness. You know, and we said, oh yeah, right. Yes. Repeat that statement over and over and over and over and over and over again. Did God know he wasn't going to do it? Of course he did. He set the whole pattern up. We don't really like it, but he did set the whole thing up. And of course, we know the story of the taskmasters. That is difficult a word here, rather than chapter one. This is really the ones that has put down a burden, put down a hardship, brings first bad things to people. And he comes along here, and he says, "Okay." The people turned around, and what did they say to Moses? And what did they say to Aaron? Did you notice what it says? I'll go there. Chapter 5, verse 21, and they, the officers in authority of Israel, said to them, Yahuwah look upon you and judge, because you, Moses and Aaron, have made our silver to be hoarded by the eye, hated by Pharaoh, and in the eyes of the servants, to put a sword in their hand to slay us. Now, did you see that in the Sesame DeMille thing, the Ten Commandments? Did you see those people being killed? They were. They didn't follow suit. Guess what happened to them? Sword came down to slay them. What do you think? It's pretty bloody. Well, at least to the person who got killed, yeah, and the family members. And these were the leaders of Israel. They're the ones that had to do this horrible task, try to build something that really wasn't worth building in the first place. And then, remember what Moses said to God? All right. He said, why have you not delivered these people like you said you would? I came down here in your name, in your authority, in your words, and you have done nothing. Remember that? He was very mad at God. You know, man of God, terrified. Now, what did God say? Chapter 6, verse 1. Now you will see, Moses, what I will do to Pharaoh. Oh. You know, sometimes we kind of read the Bible and it's nice, soft-spoken words and very casually, you know, must read the Bible. And Yahuwah said it to Moses, now you shall see what else is the most. And we get the story, right? Now, God was mad at Moses, and Moses was mad at God. Whew. When you're mad at God, what's God going to do? Sit there and say, oh, I'm sorry, son, you don't understand what I just said. God, man, you will now see, Moses, what I'm going to do. All right? It's a pretty powerful word, don't you think? Now, I want to go down to the name. Because chapter 6 talks about the name. Verse 6, therefore, say unto the children of Israel, I, Yahuwah, I will bring you out from under the burdens of Egypt, and I will rid you out of bondage, and I will redeem you with outstretched hand and with a great judgment. All right. I'll say it slow. I said it slow now, right? And all most translations says, I am that I am. I told you the foundation of what that word means. You remember what I said? It's past tense for the word came. I came. That I came. What did he come for? He came. What did he say he is going to came? Elohim was not called by the name of Yahuwah. They did not know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob did not know him by the term I came. They knew it by the name of Elohim. And God took on to Moses and said to him, now Moses gets corrected. I came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now I come fulfill what I said to them. And what did he say to them? They did not know me by the name of I came. They knew me by what name? El Shaddai. Was he trying to clarify to Moses, you know, I was known by then, they didn't understand my name, so I had to use this name, El Shaddai, and over here now I'm telling you what my name is, but you know, my name was over there, and they didn't understand what I really talked about, because you know, they were the ancient people, I have no idea. When you really read the text, Moses had to be told with unquestionable doubt, yeah, I came, and I'm El Shaddai. What's El Shaddai mean? The God who deludes, destroys things. The one who did the flood, who wiped out all mankind. That's the power. So when we look at the word El Shaddai, we're talking about someone who has got, we use the term Almighty. That's great. But in Hebrew it means the one who brought forth the deluge that destroyed the entire world. And Moses had to know that. And so when God told Moses that, he wasn't telling him, by the way, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they didn't know my real name. No, they called me by this name. I introduced myself to them by this name. Why? Because they weren't very far removed from the flood, were they? It's like 300 years, 367 years, what it was. And all of a sudden, you know, they look back, and they remembered the deluge. You know why? It was evident all around about them. They didn't have to wonder, evolution, who came from there? When did the monkeys come on scene? How did man turn into this? What, was it billions of years ago? Or 15 years? No, they knew. Evolutionary concept was unheard of then. They knew one thing, El Shaddai. And so now we're at this end, and I'm going to say it to you, very end of this page here. So I came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I now came to fulfill what I said to them. What was he promise? He's going to fulfill his promise. Now Elohim told Moses to go back to the people who just spoke to him about what they said to Aaron and to him, that they, Aaron and him, responsible for them being beaten or killed. Go back and tell them. This El Shaddai. Who's doing this? Pretty heavy stuff, isn't it? Any comments? Now you can ask some questions, or just from chapter 1 to chapter 6. Any thoughts? I'll introduce one. Oh, John.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there's the ultimate parallel between our own calling out of the Egypt that we live in to our walk, if we see God working Moses here, working the people. It's an interesting kind of parallel that runs throughout much of the scriptures.
Yeah. Yes.
The thing, and I think you brought this out when you were going through it, is how Moses' mother kept him for 3 months, and then he was put into a type of casket and put into the river, and it was as if he actually did die and was resurrected.
Dang.
And so, you know, I mean, all these themes are really strong in Moses' life. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
3 months.
Yeah. 3 months. Three. One, two, three. Very fascinating terminology. Three. Once again, it has to do with life. Someone's going to die. Someone's going to live. Right? In the time of the cross, someone died. The other one lived. All right. Now, so let's go back here for just a minute. Very opening statement of, there arose a new king of Egypt who knew not Moses. Joseph. What do you think about that? Do you see a pattern? Do you understand what God brings us back to a beginning? We always go back. We must always go back to remember always something. And everyone in your room have been with me for a year or two. We always go back to the beginning. Because that's where our heritage started from. There's not a root person's room. That heritage did not start back then. We become Abraham's seed because of what faith? What's faith based upon? Thy word is true. Therefore, your foundation is based upon truth. Then you believe, and then you walk, you live. How many times, not in your life, I'm not approaching you, how many times have you have recognized that people have really forgotten the past? And they kind of live for the moment.
That's how history can be rewritten so easily.
That's why it's being rewritten over and over again, isn't it? I think what I'm trying to say is when we go back and remember people like Joseph, not Pharaoh, Joseph. We go back and remember Abraham. Remember Isaac. Remember Jacob. Remember Joshua. Remember David. Remember the prophets, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Jeremiah. When we go back and remember those men, what did the Apostle Paul say? They're there for our admonition. Positive. And we have a tendency in our world, because of the upbringing, that we have a tendency to go back, like I read here at the beginning of Hebrews, go back to remember the works of the flesh. We try to remember, we go back and remember sins. He says, let's get over that. No longer go in that doctrine of dead works to sit. It's over with for you. How do you keep yourself from continually going back to dead works? Okay, you go over here. And you walk in the direction that God has in mind. And you go back and you say, okay, what was the good things about Joseph? What did he do? Why did God use him? Why did God use him to bring forth Egypt the direction he brought forth? Is it all because Joseph was a bad person? He taxed people like crazy? Or did God have something in mind? What did he have in mind? To bring all of Joseph's family down to a safe place. And he gave them the land of Goshen. One of the most plush places. It's still one of the most plush places in all of Egypt today. He gave them the best land. He gave them a great blessing. And we will learn a little later on, my next section of this thing, that he took it all away. So my point I want to talk about today is that remember, go back and remember these people that God used to teach us how he thinks, how he does things, how he operates. Joseph responded to the dreams. He acted upon the dreams. Jacob responded to the dreams. He acted upon the dreams. Abraham responded to the truth. He acted upon the truth. He lived it. Were there sometimes they failed? Of course, just like you and I may fail. We stumble, we fall. And maybe not all of us stumble to the point where we're so bad off that we think we'll never get back up again. But if the creator of heaven and earth is still working with you, if he has to keep you down, he'll keep you down until you're willing to say, I've done something I should not have done. I got changed my thinking, changed my heart, changed everything about me. I just... You know what I'm saying? It's one of those big issues to me, I hope you understand, and that God will fight the enemy. Not according to how we would like him to fight. Where we get to sit down in our chair and say, okay, God, I'm waiting. Didn't happen to Moses, did it? No. Moses had to get up. And he had to go to work. He had to go to war. He had to go to battle. Abraham did not want to go to war. But he had to go to war. Why didn't God just deliver Lot out of it and, the second time, deliver Lot out of it so he wouldn't have to be at war with him? No. Abraham said, I've got to go. And what did God bless Abraham with when he went to war and won? Drove the enemy completely out of the area. What did he give him? You remember? Bread and wine. Bread and wine. Oh, a blessing, isn't it? Here's a bread. Here's a glass of wine. Abraham knew what that meant. Because God pretty well let him know. What do you think about the two ladies that decided not to kill babies?
They were brave.
Brave. Courageous. Their life was at risk. Did they lie? Yeah, they did. Oh, okay. I'm going to hell because they lied. Come on. The people are people. They're human beings. But God blessed them with what?
Family.
A house. The people were named after them. Their family lived on because of their actions. We don't know about the other midwives because we don't hear about them. They probably didn't live on. All right. Now the thing I want to talk to you about, very fascinating, what your input is. Why did not Joseph's daughter cast Moses into the water and drown him?
Pharaoh's daughter.
Wasn't she supposed to obey her dad?
Pharaoh.
Ooh, listen. Who was Pharaoh talking to when he said to do this, to kill them? He told the midwives they didn't do it. He told somebody else to do it from now on. Who did he tell? His officers. His military secret police to do it. It was not a public proclamation. It wasn't plastered on the stone and chiseled in there to do that. It was a private thing. Kill him. Kill him. Kill him. Does that kind of remind you of somebody in, not too many years ago that kind of had this incredible thing about killing every Jew there was? No matter what it was, no matter what no matter what he's done, no matter how great he is or how horrible he is. Do you see the same pattern? And he had to do it openly. He had to do it secretly. He found enough horrible human beings who had compromised any kind of conscience to do the killing. Anyway.
Well, it brings to mind, Bill, when you brought that gun, that many of the soldiers... The German soldiers came home and did not even know what Hitler was up to doing. Came home and then went to fight for Israel because they were horrified. What Germany had done.
So when we kind of look at the Egyptians, people, did the Egyptian people really know what was going on? When a person in a total dictatorship, you're under fear. Your life is under terror. Your life is frightening because you can't speak openly. You can't even go openly. You got to wait until the government tells you what to do. Daniel.
Well, with regards to the rest of the Egyptian people, you factor in what Joseph did to them by enslaving the entire nation to work for Pharaoh. Because they're all slaves, they're not going to see a difference between, oh, I'm a slave. Oh, yeah, he's a slave, too. That's all they're going to notice. They're not going to notice, oh, well, I'm a slave. He wasn't, but now he is. As far as they're concerned, everybody's a slave. So if you're killed, or somebody so is killed because this reason, that reason, you're all slaves anyway. Who cares? So most Egyptian people probably didn't even consider themselves, didn't consider the issue a problem. Though. Whatever, Pharaoh does whatever he wants to because he's my boss.
Right,
they have the same problem that the Jews had.
Or Israel did. Oh, yes.
Well, also, wouldn't it be fairly easy for him to have this taken care of unseen?
Yeah.
I mean, they were all living in this separate part of the country.
Separate part of the country, right. Not in the southern area, the northern area.
So
right.
It's possible to, have some things going on in one area of the country where everybody else isn't there.
Not like the internet. Took a while to get information down there. Often think about Pharaoh's daughter. If she knew, she, quote, disobeyed. Mm-hmm. It appeared that because she was of the royal family, She lived under a different set of rules. But her maids had to obey her. Yes.
Another thing about Pharaoh's daughter in particular, she was obviously living close enough to the Jewish community in the region of which all these events
would be occurring. Yeah.
So whether or not she knew what the rules were or were not, being part of Pharaoh's house and being that close to people who was all waiting and crying to lost their infants, she would have known full well what she was doing.
I think so too. So she's a brave lady.
Yeah.
A brave lady. Can an Egyptian be brave? Can anything good come out of... What is your name? I heard someone say, if you don't say, I am that I am, someone else will make you something you don't want to be. I can understand that phrase, but you can't do that, the creator of heaven and earth. Because that the word does not mean I am. That's a different word for the word am, or the being, compared to the word that says came. Past tense, by the way. It's a past tense word, not a present tense. I'm coming. It's past tense. I came. So what's your thoughts on that? You ever think about God who says, I came? Or we think today in your world, in my world, in the Christian world, he is coming. If he is coming, what about your life? Has he not came into your world? Has God not came and brought you to his son? Has his son not come to you? Yes, he has. He came. Let this be in you. Let the mind that was in Christ be in you. If you want the mind of Christ, he's going to have to, quote, come and give his, quote, mind. And when you have it, then he came and gave you truth. What do you say to Philip? When he says, show me the Father. If you don't know me, Phil, I am who I am. If you know me, Philip, you know the Father. And sometimes we live in a world so far away from the Messiah, that is time of Jesus, that we don't really picture him really that active in our world, in our personal private life. We have a problem. We have said, well, you know, I got a job, I got family, I got kids, I've got this, I got that, I got this, and oh yeah, I got to pray this morning. Okay, I pray, and you go on. But what does the Apostle Paul say? When you work, you must work for whom?
The Lord.
Always work for the Lord. Not just when it's convenient. Not just when it's that. Why? Because he came to you. He's teaching you. He's showing you. Who is he showing you? He said who he's showing. Who is he showing?
The Son.
He's showing the Father to you. He's showing the Father to you. Do you all want to know what the Father is? Yeah. Do you all want to know what he's like? Yeah. Jesus came to show us what the Father is like. He's not different from his Father. He says, what he said, we are one. Right? And sometimes we put Jesus on the realm of salvation rather than the realm of, wow, he's like the creator of heaven and earth. He thinks like him. He talks like him. He must be in the same mindset. We talked about mindset before, right? Mindset of the creator of heaven and earth. And then we have this incredible very beginning, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1.
Bereshit,
para, Elohim, va'et hashamayim, va'et ha'aretz. Did he create one and forgot the other one? Was one behind sight than the other one? Or one at work, were they all both created quote, the same time. You remember King Solomon? What did King Solomon do? He created two buildings and completed them at the same time. Do you know what they were? The temple and the king's castle. Same time. You can't have one without the other. And we have Revelation, we also know the prophet says, I have come and I will come to create a new heaven and a new earth. He's not going to come and say, I'm going to create a heaven. Oh yeah. Think all earth. I'll catch up on that one. No. They're ihad with God. They're at one with God. They're unity with God. And he said to Moses, we won't go there today because, but he says, I will record heaven and earth to testify against you. Oh, we need two witnesses? God's got them already. He's got heaven, he's got earth. That's a lot. Don't you think it? We say, earth going to testify against me? Yeah. It's going to do that. And the earth is sighing and crying for what? For the sons of Elohim to come and, in a true sense, deliver them. Now, you don't mean look at yourself as a deliverer. But God sent Moses out to deliver them. God put Noah to deliver his family and the animals. God sends out the kings of Israel to deliver them from the enemy. Remember, Daniel talked about this last time he spoke, I think. I may get that wrong. I don't know. But he talked about that. That when you're fighting, God will send you out to war. You will fight. What did the Apostle Paul say? Put on the whole armor of God. Why? To protect yourself? No. To go to war. If you're looking to protect yourself, I don't know what's going to happen to you.
The shield will protect you.
I'm sorry, what?
I said the shield will protect you from every place.
Right, and the sword is going to help you. Sword of truth. You always are going to fight against lies, not fight against liars. For all of us have been liars. But we must fight against lies. We have come in our world, we have pulled away from lies. We have fought against them. But if you don't have the right sword, you're going to lose. Remember, it's the fiery darts of the devil that's after you, not the fiery darts of human beings. We fight against what? Flesh and blood? Every time we fight against flesh and blood, somebody is going to get killed. Blood is going to be spilled. And the war goes on, you fight another one. And blood is going to be spilled. Life is going to be taken. But you fight against the principalities of the air. You live. They die. Bill.
The I came, the I am thing. This is the wrong time, you can tell me, but... There's two passages, times, I believe, in the Brit Hoshah, John chapter 1, and someplace, I don't remember, in Hebrews, where it says, no man has ever seen God.
Correct.
How do you work with that?
The Father, not seeing the Father. Even Jesus said, no man has seen the Father. Yeah. Now, no man has seen the Creator of heaven and earth. I believe that with all my being.
Yeah.
When I see a symbol or somebody coming in that name, blessed he who comes in the name of Yahweh, I have a problem with that one. He's coming in the name. When you go into history, I mean, to the Gospels, he says, the burden or the word of the Lord came to me. The word. And then John talks about the word is. It's always been with. You can't separate the two. Now, we got to see the Son. We got to see who he is. We got to see what he does. We got to see how he acts. But when you see, when those disciples saw what he did, they actually, in a sense, looked upon the face of the Father. But not literally, but in spirit. Because he's going to come, Apostle Paul says, he's going to come as he is, not as he once was. All full power and full glory. What does glory mean?
Heaviness.
What?
Heaviness, weightiness.
There's a glory of the sun.
Light.
Light.
Brilliance.
Light. And it says there, according to the prophet, that God is going to bring in many sons unto glory. Oh. What kind of glory? What did Jesus tell his disciples in Matthew? I hate this terminology. The cold so-called Beatitudes. It's not an attitude, people. Read it. It's actions. If you give mercy, you will receive mercy. If you don't give mercy, you don't receive mercy. It's not, oh, I have a beautiful attitude. I'm a merciful person. See, look, I'm merciful. I'm kind. I'm hungry and I'm thirst for righteousness. Oh, that's all you're doing? No, you're going to go after it because you're thirsty. You're going to hunt it down. You're going to take it. You're going to drink it in. And you're going to live it. You're going to be part of it. And then what it says, you will see the Creator of heaven and earth. If you don't, you don't see the Creator of heaven and earth. I hate that term, Beatitudes. Beautiful attitudes. No. Horrible Christian terminology. Hope you can kind of cast it from your mind. Because it's really what Jesus is talking about is, if you do this, this will God bless you with. If you do this, he'll bless you here. If you do this, he'll bless you there. Right? And that's the whole system. He turned to his disciples, he said, by the way, you are a light. I told my wife this morning. I said, he says, you don't put a light, I don't remember how phrase, excuse me, under a table. So no one sees anything. Where are you supposed to put it up? On top of the table, upon the mantle, so the whole room sees. That's what we do. Your light, how you walk, and it says there in Galatians, the 5th chapter, I think it's the 25th or 24th, 26th verse, somewhere in there, that if you live in the Spirit, you must walk in it, so people will see you. Now, it doesn't mean that I get to go around telling people, praise the Lord, do you know the Lord? I want to tell you about the Lord. Talk about the Lord. No. What is light? Light is the actions of something. Light does not go out. It's doing something. It's showing. And so when you have light within you, you are becoming sons of light. It's in 2 John, or is it 1 John, talked about the Father of lights. You remember that phrase? Now, I'm sorry. I'm being cynical here. Some people associate with that with Hanukkah. I'm saying, okay, whatever you want to associate with it, but I don't. Associated with what?
Being a light.
Being a light. And he is the Father of lights. He is not the Father of Hosea.
Right.
Oh, that's my first section. I think Exodus is probably one of the most powerful books in the Bible. It shows, it demonstrates, it tells you everything, how God thinks, how God acts, how God responds. It also shows his mercy, also shows his anger, also shows his frustration, if I use that terminology. It also shows him, he said, I am going to test you out. Now, none of us like to be tested. You remember the quote, Lord's Prayer? Lead us not into temptation. Oh, mean God leads us to temptation to do something evil? No, that's a Greek word, which can mean, quote, that. Also means, lead us not into the trial. Deliver us from the trial. Just deliver us. We know trial is going to come. We don't want the trial. Help us to hear your word. Bless us this day with your bread. Bless us today the daily bread. That's what you ask him. And don't lead us into this trial. Just help us to take the bread and say, thank you, God. In a nutshell, right? It's the simplicity of that particular prayer. All right? Well, one of the simplicity of that particular prayer. Okay, do you not want to take any more of your time? May God bless all you and provide for you for the rest of the day. And I don't know who's speaking this afternoon. You? That guy over there. That guy over there. I want to say one more thing before I close. I know some of you were so busy you couldn't hear all the messages that were given. But I tell you, I watched when he spoke, when you spoke, Daniel spoke, and when Dave spoke. I looked at people. I watched people. I look at their eyes. I see what's in their eyes. I see what's going on. And I'd make eye contact with one of you, right? I do that because it tells me something. Do you get what they're saying? I'll tell you, there are more people there this year looking at the speaker, listening carefully what he was saying. More than I've seen before. That's growth. Tremendous amount of growth. Not in you. Not you're doing it. No. Tremendous amount of growth that the Spirit of the living God is increasing and increasing. And we have a feast. By the way, 7 days or 8 days sometimes can be very difficult to live together. Are you ready for another trial? God's going to put you to a Sukkot, and guess what? Next year, you're going to have a test. We had a test this year. We had a test last year. We've always had tests every year. Some of the tests were so miserable for me, I didn't even want to ever think about it. I had one feast. Every single day was horribly miserable, but I still had to get up and talk. It was the worst feast I ever had. It was miserable every single hour. You know what? I had to go through it. It was a test. I didn't look and see whether or not I'm going to pass this test. No. Hey, I wasn't thinking about passes. I was just, get me out of here. I want to get out. I want to go home. But it never happened. Because God was testing me out. If I bring everybody against you, if I bring everybody can't stand you unto the feast and they let it be known, will you still stand? I didn't say, oh yeah, I can do that. I says, let me out of here. But we grow. And your trial you had this week, my dear. Yes, suffering does bring forth something. Brings forth a tremendous amount of greater confidence in God. You say, got to get to God. I got to pray. I got to read. I can't do this alone. I need his help. And nobody in the face of the earth could ever help you except him. And when a trial comes and difficulties come, that's when he says, he's not testing you. I'll say, you don't listen to me. He says, I'm going to bring you closer to me. I'm going to raise you up. I'm going to make you stronger. I'm going to take away something here. I'm going to bring forth sorrow. And then you will come to me because I am your strength. I am your power. I am your rock. I am everything for you. Nobody can deliver you from this thing and deliver you from out of it except me. And he said, do you believe me? And you say, oh, yeah. He says, do you think I'm going to do it the way you want? Would you please? He says, no, that won't work. He does it the way he knows it's going to work. I'm kind of over time here, and I meant to say goodbye, and I'm rallying on here. I'm sorry.
I thought you did really good that day when somebody woke you up with a shofar right after you got to bed with a nap.
Oh, that was awful.
What was that?
Somebody
was
just laid down.
Everybody's
like
practicing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. I remember. Yeah. I walked up and I said, okay, I don't mind you blowing the shofar. It's great, but when I'm taking a nap, no. Nobody blow. Of course, everybody laughed and chuck, chuck, chuck. Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. Dave, you had something to say?
I had two things that I had wanted to share earlier and I'd forgotten to write them down, but it coincides with what you're saying about the lights. And again, it's just analogies, but just hopefully a picture in your mind. Any of you ever been to the Oakland Coliseum in Oakland, of course? They engineered an absolutely amazing curtain system there that's run on cables. And when the curtains are up and drawn into this building, it is absolutely pitch black because it's a very thick, heavy fabric that they use. Anyhow, the windows are at the top of the building. And again, this cable system, just as it's pulling, comes up and closes upward instead of downward.
Oh.
The point that they made, once this building is fully closed off, it's so pitch black in there that they can set a candle in the middle of this Colosseum, and from anywhere, any point in this Colosseum, and you know how big that place is, that candle gives light. No matter where you're at, you can see that candle and the effects of the candle, ever so small. That is what we are to be here in this dark world. One little light. We are His children. He is the Father of lights. We are His. We are to be that light in this dark world. The other thing that we're told to be is that we're to be salt here also on the earth. Salt, as most of you know, was used as a preservative before we had refrigeration, especially for meats and things. My wife grew up eating oatmeal, hating oatmeal, many, many years until I came along and said, you need a little, she sugared it up and stuff, and I tasted it, and goes, oh, you need salt. She goes, what do you mean salt? Just put a little salt on it and mix it in and try it. She goes, I like it. You know, hey, Mikey, he likes it. You know, that, again, with being the light and the salt, we can be a savory peace to this world. We can be a peace, a calm, and a savory thing to this world. Just like a little bit of salt on that oatmeal made all the difference for her, from hating it to fully enjoying it now. That is our place here on earth as well. Salt and light.
Yes.
One more thing. There's a song that we dance to, Yeshua is the light.
Oh, light, yeah.
And it says, He confounds the darkness, and when the light comes, the darkness must flee.
It must flee. It must can't stay. It has his desire. Yeah.